Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Here's an offer you don't want to miss. For just $3, treat yourself to a Krispy Kreme donut, like their irresistible chocolate donut with sprinkles, and an any size hot coffee or refreshing iced tea. Just three. Whether you're fueling up for the day or just taking a sweet break, this deal is for you. Price and participation may vary. Offer valid December 10th through April 30th, 2025 at participating McDonald's while supplies last. Krispy Kreme and associated trademarks used under license. Copyright 2024 KKDC. Copyright 2024 McDonald's.
It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today and get free welcome coins you can spin for a chance at cash prizes. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The Rewind with Henry McKean. This is News Talk.
You're welcome to The Rewind with me, Henry McKean. We're going to take a nostalgic look back on the year. Today, we're going to look back to the 90s. The year is 1990. Over the next hour, we'll be chatting to the game changers from 90 with movies like Ghost, Dances with Wolves, and Pretty Woman. Nelson Mandela was released from prison. I moved to Ireland. Here is my mum, Rosemary McKean, bringing us back to that moment when we moved here way back in 1990.
Four boys, two dogs, and a cat in a Volvo. And we sailed from Stranraer, I recall, and it was daylight, it was the afternoon. I can remember being so delighted seeing the Strand in Sandymount. And the only thing you guys wanted, you just wanted a McDonald's, and that's what you got.
So we travelled all the way over from Scotland. We left a little village called Kilmacombe. We packed up this purple Volvo estate, and there was bicycles on the roof, suitcases, elastic to keep everything in place. And then we took that ferry across the Irish Sea, yes, into the north, and then we drove down. And then on arrival, you're saying all we wanted, yes, was a McDonald's.
That's it, absolutely correct. And we went to McDonald's in Dunleary, and we went to the house in Sandy Cove. And 35 years, Henry, I can't believe it. It's gone in a flash. It's been wonderful.
I'm here with Neil Kavanagh, a friend of Rewind. I'm going to ask you to bring us back to 1990 and a car show.
Yeah, so in 1990, I was the tender age of 5 years old. And cars were kind of one of my favourite toys growing up, but I'd never really been to a car show. And so my parents brought me to what was probably one of the biggest, I think even to this day, one of the biggest car shows ever held in Ireland. It was the RDS Motor Show. And this was when every single brand was there. But I was sort of into my fast cars. And so it was a real rarity in Ireland to see anything exotic. But on this stand, I remember it so clearly. My brother was with me. He was 8. And incidentally, he doesn't remember it as well as I do. Wasn't as defining a moment for him as was for me. But on this show, on this stand at the show, was a Porsche 959, which was the ultimate Porsche of the time, a Ferrari Testarossa, which is, you know, now an incredibly valuable car, and a Lamborghini Diablo. And I had a little model of this Lamborghini, but to see one in the flesh was something else. But I was particularly lucky. An uncle of mine was involved in the organisation of this show, and he got me and my brother up on the stand to look at these cars, and he whispered in her ear, "Which one would you like to sit in?" And of course, we straight away pointed at this Lamborghini Diablo. He then proceeded to walk over to the car and had this sort of awkward moment in front of this big crowd of people trying to open the door, not realising, as me and my brother did, the door went up and not out. So we got this big round of applause when we sat into this car, and it was a moment I'll never forget. Fast forward 30 years after a lifelong passion of sports cars, I actually got to drive an identical Lamborghini when a more fortuitous friend than myself ended up with one of these Lamborghinis. And I tell you, I've never forgotten that day. It's always something I come back to. And I actually found a photograph of the exact stand only about 2 years ago. I think all my friends thought I was lying, but there was the proof.
Thank you for your 1990 story.
You're very welcome.
The Rewind with Henry McKean.
couldn't believe it when David O'Leary went to take the penalty. I just couldn't believe it. I thought, no, come on.
The nation holds its breath. Yes! Ireland are through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup.
This is The Rewind, the year of Italia 90. And I remember coming into Ireland and it was just full of bunting and celebration. And there was a voice. There was a voice everywhere. You couldn't get away from it. It's George Hamilton. George Hamilton, thank you so much for joining us here for The Rewind.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Henry. A delight to spool back into that, the beginning of that decade and the wonderful memories that it conjures up.
And, you know, for you, you're one of the most recognisable voices in the country. Like, just chatting to people today about you before you came in, they know your voice as soon as you speak. So when you're in a hardware store or when you're, you know, I don't know, at the train station or ordering a pint, you know, do people always know your voice before they recognise you?
It's kind of funny that because there'll be a flash of recognition a lot of the time, but then nothing further until you get into the second phase of the interaction. And then they say, are you?
Yes, they try and place you.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't happen instantaneously, but something rings a bell and then it goes on from there, yeah.
And you get a lot. You get that a nation holds its breath. And obviously you were nominated for a book award, an Onpost book award for that. And you've got your new book out as well. The Hamilton notes. Do people ask you to say a few words to them? Do they actually ask you to give us some of those famous catchphrases like danger here? Do you get that?
Yes, that in particular is a particularly fond memory because there were two guys who were together in a bar that I happened to be in downtown Dublin not long after I said danger here in the course of a match between Ireland and the Soviet Union in Hanover. That was Euro 88, 2 years before what we're thinking back on. And that danger here was obviously something that came out of a sequence of play when the ball began with the Russian goalkeeper away to the left. And it seemed like a good time to draw a comparison with Paddy Bonner, who'd gone quite a while without conceding a goal. But while I was in the middle of explaining this, the play moved rather swiftly from left to right until the ball landed at the feet of Oleg Protasov. And just at that point, I was putting a full stop to my Bonner remarks, and it was obvious that there was danger here. And of course there was, and he scored. And that was the equaliser to Ronnie Whelan's goal off his shin pad. Memories of Hanover then, yes. But danger here in the pub, Mulligan's of Poole Beg Street.
Yes.
I was shooting the breeze with some friends, and these two guys came up to me and they said, is it really you? And I said, yeah, it's me, yeah.
Yes.
Because we've just set up a website called dangerhere.com.
That's right,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and Paul Little was one of the guys. And I'm still in touch with him. His dad worked in RTE back in the day. But it was just the chance meeting. I'm not really answering your question, but
no,
they certainly wanted me to say danger here because they'd taken it. And, you know, there was a column in, I think it's still there in Private Eye called Coleman Balls, which is commentator gaffes down the years.
Yes.
And they were modelling it on this.
Yeah.
It wasn't just me. There were others as well. And they had Ronglish, which was the way Ron Atkinson spoke
English. Yes, of course. Yes.
So it was just a chance meeting, and we became friends right in that instant, because of something I'd said.
And this is the thing, you know, being a commentator, you're there at some of the biggest events in the world, biggest sporting events, and I've got it here: 12 World Cups, 12 Euros, 11 Olympics, just unreal. All those years, 46 years at it. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it's actually longer? Yeah, because I first broadcast as a student. I was still a student and I was trying to get into the BBC in Belfast, where I was based and where I'm from. And the first match report I did was in 1972, which makes it like 52 years.
Yeah.
And the first commentary I did was a rugby match. It was Ireland-Scotland in the spring of 1974.
74.
So we're actually talking 50 years as a commentator.
Of course, you're 50 years at it.
Yeah, the 46 bit probably relates to RTE. When I moved to RTE.
Of course, because you were the BBC.
Temporarily for the World Cup in 1978 in Argentina. And then when I came back from that, they offered me a job. So I must have done all right
in Argentina. And that's the thing. I mean, so many people, they leave RTE and they go to the BBC, but you came to RTE and you stayed for such a, well, I'm
longer than I've been alive. I'm 46 years of age. Did you love it? Did you love being a part of it? Even though a commentary box can be quite lonely and, you know, it's a really difficult skill. I tried it once. And, and talking of gaffes, and I know it's unfair to bring up gaffes, it's a really difficult technique, isn't it? It's a real skill.
Well, yeah, there's, your colleague on News Talk, Pat Kenny, had a wonderful phrase to describe the commentary. He said that there is a choreography to a television commentary because you're not on your own like you are on the radio, and you can paint your pictures, and maybe you can actually indulge in a little bit of poetic license on the radio.
Yeah.
But on television, your job is to complement what the viewer is seeing, so you can't go off on one.
And you say that in your books about not stating the bleeding obvious, and it's hard not to. And sometimes you've got to, and you've got, as you said, you've got to complement it. For you, I want to go back to 1990. We're here talking about that year. What was that like? And when you were, you know, over there in Italy, did you realize how much magic was going on back home? And what were those Jack Charlton years like and getting to the quarterfinals?
Well, to begin with the great Con Houlihan remark, when someone said, what was it like, Italia 90? And he said, I don't know, I was there.
Of course,
And there was a bit of that involved. Mm. So it was absolutely perfect. But that was the beginning of our adventure. Our first match was in Milan, and we went on from there. Well, I think it was that, inevitably, the quarterfinal against Romania, because how they'd got there, they had played against the Netherlands and Egypt and England, and it ended up drawing 1-1 with the Netherlands, which was that match where Netherlands scored, Niall Quinn equalised, and then they realised that if they kept it at 1-1, they'd both qualify.
Yes, yes.
But what that also meant was they had identical records. So there was no goal difference or anything like that. It had to be that mythical drawing of lots. And lying in wait are West Germany and Romania. And you think, whoa, this could be curtains here. But of course, Ireland get lucky. Yeah. They get Romania.
Yeah.
The Netherlands get Germany and get knocked out.
Yes.
The West Germany go on to the final.
Yeah.
And we get Romania.
Yeah.
And that was a stroke of luck.
Yeah.
And then I was down to, the way it was divvied up was that I was down to do the match in Milan, which was West Germany, Netherlands. And then the next day, the game in Genoa, Republic of Ireland, Romania. I can't remember what was supposed to happen there, but the planning had been done on the basis that Ireland weren't going to qualify. So
absolutely,
we were not assigned to this match.
Yeah.
However it worked
the
out.
Experts.
So suddenly I'm on this match.
Mm.
So Tom and I have to travel in our hire car from Milan to 100 miles odd to Genoa on a really hot day. And we leave in the morning and we're thinking, you know, if this works out, we really need to stay down there. So we decided we were going to book a B&B when we got to not come back to our hotel in Milan. And then we had another thought. It's just that we're about to leave Milan. We pass a shopping centre, say, let's go in here and get a bottle of fizz just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case. So we get the bottle of fizz and we put it in the back of the car and we drive.
Yes.
And we're having a great time. I remember the journey very well. Tom's a great mimic and he was mimicking Jimmy McGee all the way down to Genoa.
That would have been Jimmy, great.
It was wonderful. Anyway, we got to Genoa, we found lodgings and then we went off to the match. We parked in the official car park. Now, in Italy at the World Cup in 1990, every host city was dry on the day of a game. So there's no way we should be having Asti Spumanti in our possession.
Oh, definitely not.
And certainly not taking it into the stadium.
Yeah, and commentating.
But somehow or another, it secreted itself in my satchel.
Yes.
And in we went. And it was at our feet through the 120 minutes of stultifyingly dull extra time scoreless draw against Romania. And then, of course, it goes to the shootout. And I'm told that the 6-1 news, which is on at the same time, is going to take the shootout because it's so monumental. And at the same time, in Dublin Castle, Charlie Haughey was wrapping up Ireland's presidency of the EU because it was the end of June, the 6 months was up.
Of course.
And he suspended the press conference. He said, there's something we should be watching here. And so all eyes in Dublin Castle then turned to the array of televisions. So
everybody
around,
was watching.
All watching it. I didn't know that bit of it at the time, but I did know that anybody who was watching Irish TV, because there only were two channels, was watching either us on Network 2, as it was called, or RTÉ 161 News. And that's where it came from. Because when Timofte and Bonner set it up for the final penalty kick to decide it all, I was aware that everybody...
Every eyeball.
Every Irish eyeball was on this. And that's how that came about. And we're back to Pat Kenny's choreography of the television coverage. Because there's no surprise to an experienced commentator what happens in a penalty shootout or with any penalty kick. They'll give you a wide shot.
Yeah.
They will then focus on the goalkeeper and then they'll focus on the taker of the penalty.
Yes.
So we're in a close-up of David O'Leary when I say this kick can decide it all and then shut up because I know there's a wide shot
it's
coming.
It's visual, yes. Let the picture
tell the story. So O'Leary places the ball and the shot changes to goalkeeper and O'Leary about to take the kick. And that's the moment that the words just came to me because it was obvious that everybody was watching The Nation Holds Its Breath.
Absolutely fantastic.
That's how that came about. And you could never script that. You know, there are those who feel that, and you do prepare facts and figures and have them at the ready. But the great Bill McLaren once said to me, you know, that all of that stuff that I prepare and all the multicolored notes.
He was brilliant.
He said, I will only use 5% of that, but I will never know until the match is over
what I'm going to use.
Yeah, what I'm going to leave
You've
out.
Got to be ready for everything.
And it's the swirl in your head when you're in the zone and it's the match that's consuming you and all around it. That these phrases come to you.
Yeah.
You've got to trust yourself. Mm. It's a bit like a player or indeed, I often say a jazz musician. You know, you're on the saxophone and I'm playing the piano and there's the drummer and now you're the soloist.
And what am I going to do here that's a bit different and special?
But you know where you're starting from and you know how many bars there are until you get back to where you're supposed to be.
Yes.
But in the meantime, you can do your thing.
There's a little bit of jazz there.
Yeah. So the match and the nation holding its breath and Packy Bonner and David O'Leary pouring that stale fizzy wine over me live on the air when I interviewed them after the match. That would be the sporting highlight of Italia 90. But the personal highlight came when I came home because bear in mind, a World Cup's a long thing. I've been away like 5 weeks or more. And my two daughters at the time were 8 and 5. So daddy's missed. And
they missed you.
They came with their mother to pick me up at the airport, and this was great. And when we got back to the house, hadn't they done a collage of Ciao was the mascot of Italia 90, and they'd drawn Ciao in a big picture, and it was on our front door.
Oh, fantastic.
And the car pulled into the cul-de-sac and then into the drive. And as I got out of the car, all the children in the cul-de-sac came running.
Oh, beautiful.
And from the next door house emerged my neighbour, Martin Coonan, former principal of Star of the Sea National School in Sandymount.
I know it.
In his pinstripe suit, it was his trademark. And this pinstriped gent had a silver platter on which was a bottle of champagne and glasses.
This was
my welcome home.
That is just so beautiful. What a beautiful Italia 90 memory. George Hamilton, thank you so much for joining us. And a quick reminder to the listeners out there, the Hamilton Notes is in all bookshops now. Thank you for joining us on The Rewind 1990.
And thank you very much for having me, Henry. It was a most enjoyable trip down memory lane.
The Rewind with Henry McKean.
It's time to have your high-five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today and get free welcome coins you can spin for a chance at cash prizes. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The Rewind
with Henry McKean.
We're talking about the year 1990, a huge year for me personally. It was the year I came to Ireland. I moved to Ireland as a child. I was just 12 years of age. And I remember a can of Coke was 50p Back in Scotland, it was 25p. Also, chocolate bars were 25p. Back in Scotland, they were 20. That was the first thing I noticed. And you couldn't get spiral bars or cherry Coke, but I got over that. We're joined now by Jonathan de Burka Butler. And you've been looking into some of the biggest stories of the year in 1990. You're very welcome.
It's interesting that you mention the cost of living back then, 1990, because 1990 mm-hmm. was the same year, the year that you arrived, Henry,
yes,
that the Irish pound coin was introduced into circulation. Now, you might remember it. It was a big silver coin.
I do. It was a beautiful thing. Beautiful coin.
Yeah, it was
coin.
a beautiful thing. It was about a little bit bigger than the current 2 euro
and
coin.
And it was thin.
And it was quite thin, but it was heavy. Mm-hmm. You could feel it in your pocket
you
as
could.
You were going around. But you got value for money back then. There was a stag on the back of it.
There was.
And the harp, the requisite harp there. And it replaced the old green pound note,
which
stayed
punt.
In circulation. Yeah, the old punt, which stayed around in circulation for a while. But I remember you only needed a few of them to buy a pint. Now, obviously, I was only 14.
You were 14. Buying them at 14.
No, well, I was about to say, Henry, I mean, I was only 14 at the time, so I wasn't buying pints.
Not many.
At that stage. Not many, no. Although I do remember there were still a few bars around town where you could probably go in with a bit of a squeaky voice and still managed to get
and a bad fake ID.
And a very bad fake ID, yes. Well, we won't go into that. We won't go into that but, too much.
Yeah, so obviously the cost of living, I remember everyone used to drive a Nissan Micra and roads were made out of concrete, not tarmac, and that's changed now. Also, from a pop music point of view, tell us.
Yeah, I do not want what I haven't got. Does that ring a bell with you?
It does, absolutely.
Sinead O'Connor's mm-hmm. second album, which contained the smash hit Nothing Compares to You, which I think was released later that year. And of course, the video became famous for that trickling tear that rolls down her face when she mentions the flowers that were planted by her mama in the backyard.
And yeah, it was as you said, it was a Prince song, and it went global, and it made her into a superstar.
Turned her into a superstar, but as we all know, it didn't last for too long because of her ripping up the picture of the Pope, which of course happened. I can't remember what year that happened, but it doesn't make it into 1990.
It was a few years later, and my understanding is she took the Pope's picture from her mum's bedroom and she was trying to punish her mother, and obviously the Catholic Church as well. And now all these years later, we can understand why she did it.
Indeed. Earlier that year, Nelson Mandela was released from prison. He was released from prison on February the 11th of 1990. And I'll never forget it because there was lots of coverage of it. I mean, I only had two channels back then. RT1
you just had the two?
Only had the two, yeah, absolutely.
You mean you didn't have the big aerial to pick up the ones from the UK?
No, we wouldn't do such a thing as a leap.
Oh, what about Sky? We got Sky that year.
Yeah, we got Sky later on.
You did
on,
get Sky. Right.
Yeah, eventually we did. But back then in 1990, we still only had the two channels. But I remember that this was covered on RT1. There was widespread coverage of it, as you can imagine. I mean, he had been in prison for 27 years and nobody had seen him besides the few prison guards and the other prisoners that were with him.
So, he was a young man when you went in.
Well, he was Young-ish. A very young man when he went in.
Mr. Nelson Mandela will, within seconds appear, and that'll be the moment the world has been waiting for. There's Mr. Mandela, Mr. Nelson Mandela, a free man taking his first steps into a new South Africa. Mrs. Winnie Mandela next to him, waving to the crowds. Hand in hand, they leave the Victor Verster prison.
A car pulls up at these gates and all of a sudden this man walks out and people had to get accustomed to seeing this figure. Because, of course, he became one of the biggest names in not just South African politics, but global politics. As I said, it was February 11th that he was released, and 4 years later, he became the first prime minister, or was it president, I can't remember, of South Africa.
President, I think, and obviously...
Presidential.
You know, 1990, apartheid was still there, it was breaking up. And I remember the images. I remember I used to like watching the news, even as a 12-year-old. I know that sounds really strange, but I did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. That and The Simpsons. Kind of the same now, really, on cable link on a Sunday night. And with that, there were hundreds of thousands of people that lined the streets as he walked out, got out of the car and walked. Absolutely fascinating and historical.
Later that year, Iraq invaded Kuwait, triggering the Gulf War. So this was Saddam Hussein, who, of course, decided that he would install a puppet government in Kuwait to clear debts from his Iran-Iraq war. that had gone on a few years before. He was trying to stop them drilling in his territory, at least that's what he said as well. And he wanted better access to the Persian Gulf so he could access the oil wells there. And there was also a moral argument that he came up with later on, which kind of resonates today, because he wanted to hold Israel to ransom effectively and get them out of Palestinian territories, which he had seen as being illegally occupied. So even then, that was the discussion. It didn't last very long. It started on August 2nd, as I said, in 1990, and it lasts until February of 1991, and his forces were comprehensively beaten by a group of nations that came together. I think there was more than nearly 40 nations.
Operation
Desert Storm, that was it. Yeah.
And yeah, I remember it really well. We lived in Kuwait, not at that time. We were out of there by that stage. But I remember my dad saying he recognised some of the Westerners that Saddam had taken hostage in hotels at the beginning. He recognised some of them. Some of them were his friends. So we were really kind of following it quite closely. And we were really quite cross with Saddam for what he did, because, you know, Kuwait then was a sovereign country. But yeah, you say it yourself, Saddam, you know, wasn't captured. It was the next time. It was 2003 they went after him for weapons of mass destruction, which didn't exist.
Yeah, and George Bush, who was the president, this is George Bush Sr., who was the president at the time, was asked about it. And he basically said that, look, had we continued into Baghdad and gone after Saddam Hussein, it would have cost, you know, a lot more lives than they had lost. I think the Americans only lost something like 150 lives in that particular campaign. So they decided to stop where they stopped. And that was bad news for other groups which had, you know, launched an uprising within Iraq, most notably the Kurds, many of whom were then massacred as a result of their involvement in an uprising. So it was kind of inexplicable in a way that they didn't go after Saddam.
Yeah, it was surprising.
Finish him off. Yeah, finish him off. But then, of course, the son went in and did it a couple of years later.
Kuwait is liberated. Iraq's army is defeated. Our military objectives are met. Kuwait is once more in the hands of Kuwaitis in control of their own destiny. We share in their joy, a joy tempered only by our compassion for their ordeal.
Other big events, Jonathan, in 1990 that you want to share with us?
Yeah, it was actually the same month that that invasion happened in Kuwait that Brian Keenan, do you remember Brian Keenan? He was released from captivity after 1,574 days. He had been kidnapped in Beirut. He spent a lot of time with the UK journalist John McCarthy, who I think was released before him, was he not?
Around the same time,
A couple of months before him. He went on, of course, Brian Keenan, to write a brilliant book about his experiences called An Evil Cradling. Have you ever read that book?
I haven't. I've heard of it. And it was a huge, huge book for him.
Yeah. It was a huge, huge book, and it was brilliantly written. I remember reading it when it came out, and I met him a couple of years later and thanked him for writing the book, actually.
Did you?
He's a bit of a hero, I have to say.
There was huge crowds around him when he came home, and the relief, and there was such joy on the streets of Ireland when he was released and when he was brought home.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes, an extraordinary man, no doubt about it.
And now Mrs. Robinson will make her first speech as President of Ireland.
Wachtran no hafen heren, Marvik Robi.
Agini Ushle, citizens of Ireland, Manona heren, agus Fearna heren. You have chosen me to represent you, and I am humbled and grateful for your trust. The Ireland I will be representing is a new Ireland, open, tolerant, inclusive. Many of you who voted for me did so without sharing all my views. This, I believe, is a significant signal of change, a sign, however modest, that we have already passed the threshold to a new pluralist Ireland.
1990 was also the year that Mary Robinson was elected. She became the seventh president of Ireland, of course, the first woman to be elected.
She had a recent movie out, Warts and All. She talks about everything in it and about stepping down early, and she regrets that. But she joined the UN. But, you know, there was lots of internal politics, and she managed to win it. Tell us about that internal, the political the political movement at the time?
Yeah, it was very interesting because you had three candidates. So you had Mary Robinson, Austin Curry, who was running for Fine Gael, and then, of course, you had Brian Lenihan for Fianna Fáil. Now, Brian Lenihan was seen as the favourite and a shoe-in, really, for the presidency, although at that particular time, Charles Haughey was the Taoiseach, was quite unpopular. It became apparent as the campaign went along that Mary Robinson was running a good campaign and she became a real contender. But the real turning point came when a tape was released of an interview with Brian Lenihan. He had given it to a PhD student. And in it, he talks about putting pressure on President Hillary all of 8 years previously not to dissolve the Dáil. Now, this was something that he had always denied doing to friends and to anybody who asked. But in this interview, he admits it. This goes out into the papers and it kind of ruins Brian Lennon's reputation. Charlie Haughey has to kick him out of cabinet, as far as I recall, and it kind of dents his confidence. Now, he does make a bit of a comeback towards the end of the campaign. And in fact, in the first round of voting, he got about 7% more of the votes than Mary Robinson.
Yes.
But at that point, Austin Curry and Mary Robinson had done a transfer pact. Austin Curry was knocked out. And the majority of those transfers went over to Mary Robinson, and she became the first woman president of Ireland. She was inaugurated in December of that year.
I remember going to the cinema to actually see The Field. Tell us about The Field.
Oh, The Field. I mean, what a wonderful movie. I mean, that was Jim Sheridan who directed that. He's been in the news recently.
He has.
Himself.
He's been knocking about.
He might be making a documentary on another interesting character. But this was Richard Harris who starred in this in the role of the Bull McCabe. But there was so many people in that cast. Sean Bean played the son. Tom Berenger played the Yank, I think he was referred to. Brenda Fricker was Richard Harris's, or the Bull's, wife. I think she only had one line in the whole thing towards the end, but she stole the show.
Yes, she did.
And John Hurt played Bird. So there was quite a cast, and it was a wonderful movie, I remember.
It was very moving.
Yeah, it was very moving. And I remember, you know, lots of people in Ireland being quite proud of it at the time and the production levels and that kind of thing.
So she's putting up The Field?
That's right. On the first day of October, by public auction.
Public auction? What will happen?
Men will make bids.
Bids? Bids? For my field? Just who would insult me by bidding for my field here in Carrickthomond?
There might be outsiders, but...
I remember that film so well, and those memories of 1990. It was, Ireland was on the up. It was before the Celtic Tiger, and there was this happy-go-lucky feel, and it was such a powerful year for me, and a culture shock moving to Ireland, so similar to the UK, but so, so different. And I discovered Red Lemonade as well. I mean, I still like Marmite, though, even though the Irish don't really... Do you like Marmite?
No, I'm not a fan of Marmite, Henry. That's not good. I'm delighted that you've integrated fully with the Red Lemonade. That's fantastic.
No, yeah.
It's very bad for your
teeth. And Cydona. Can you still get Cydona?
Cydona, an absolute classic. Now you're bringing me back to memories of holidays down in Connemara in the middle of the summer of 1990. And the Cydona... which people would give to you, or the older people, my brothers would drink it and they'd say, I'm having it because it tastes like cider.
It was so sour. There was a sour flavour.
The big men drinking Cydona. I generally stuck to the Coca-Colas and Fanta.
Oh, you kept to the Fantas. Mm. Well, Jonathan De Burka Butler, thank you so much for joining
us, Henry,
for Rewind 1990.
The Rewind with Henry McKean.
It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today for a free welcome offer that can get you spinning and winning right away. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The Rewind with Henry McKean on News Talk.
David O'Callaghan from the Here and Back Again podcast. It's Rewind. It's 1990, and we're going to talk about pop culture. We're going to talk about everything that happened in the movies, in music, and in your life?
Yeah, I would have been in Maynooth College at this point. And yeah, it was movies wise. I just remember we regularly would get the bus into town to go to the cinema because it was cool back then, or it wasn't, I suppose, cool. But the big kind of, I suppose, trend or vibe of the year was gangster movies were absolutely massive that
gangsters.
Year. Yeah, gangsters were everywhere. It was the Coen brothers with Miller's Crossing, if you remember that. Brilliant movie. Look into your heart. Look into your heart. Oh, John Turturro, you snake in the grass. Absolutely brilliant. There was Godfather Part 3. Still sketchy. Still disappointing. I watched it again recently. It's probably not as bad as I thought it was, but it's still not Godfather 1 and 2.
And at the time, it was criticised, wasn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely panned. When you're following up two of the best movies of all time, you're on it. No, gone. Probably the other thing it suffered from was the fact that there was a new kid on the block. Martin Scorsese released Goodfellas. And obviously, people lost their mind. One of the best gangster movies of all time. Absolutely brilliant.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
And Goodfellas is still brilliant. The soundtrack is great. The acting is great. It's dark, but it's also funny. And it's still great to this day.
Yeah, to this day, fantastic. And the energy, like it's like a punk rock band. Like, it's just the energy in the movie is unbelievable. And funnily enough, for that year, there was if anybody remembers the small guy, Joe Pesci, he was Pesky in Home Alone. He was actually in Home Alone the same year. So I always like to think that everything bad that happened to him in Home Alone was payback for what he did in Goodfellas. So Home Alone was a huge hit that year. So looking at the overall year, the most popular movies worldwide, Ghost was number one with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore. I know, talk about flashbacks, and I can guarantee you, and everybody knows, the sign-ups to pottery classes went through the roof.
Did you sign up? Were they sexy?
No, it was a bit messy, and no.
You didn't find love at the pottery class?
No, sadly not. Still looking, you know, it's pottery classes have collapsed. No, moving on. So Ghost was number one. Then you had Home Alone, which was a huge family favourite. Everybody loved Kevin McAllister. Julia Roberts and Richard Gere in Pretty Woman caught the imagination of the public and was a massive hit.
Absolutely huge. Big mistake. Huge. But it wasn't a big mistake. It was fantastic.
It was unbelievable. Like, people just... And it's still one of those classic rewatchables that you'll just... If it's on the TV, people go, we'll have a look here. Pretty woman, look my way.
No, thank you. Hi.
Hello.
Do you remember me?
No, I'm sorry. I was in here yesterday. You wouldn't wait on me?
Oh.
You work on commission, right?
Yes.
Big mistake. Big.
Huge.
I have to go shopping now.
So really great. And then rounding off the top five was Kevin Costner's Dancing with Wolves, and good old Arnie had Total Recall, which I obviously, as a nerd, I was obsessed with.
It was a great movie, and they gave us the three breasts.
Yeah, there was that, and then the head kind of coming off like a robotic. You could argue like it was looking well into the future, and a lot of it's kind of come true, even though we're not on Mars. But other than that, it's all kicking off. Sequels were very big that year, so you had Back to the Future 3. Again, not as probably loved as the other two, probably because it was a Western, but when you look back now, I think that was unfairly judged, unlike The Godfather 3.
And, you know, a grower.
Yeah, absolutely, over time, and that was a great trilogy. Gremlins 2, The New Batch, I absolutely adored. Most other people didn't. Predator 2 and Die Hard 2 also came out. And then on the stress side of everything, on the horror side, Misery, Stephen King's Misery, was a huge, huge hit. Talk about 90 minutes of absolute, oh my God. And who will ever, the sledgehammer to the foot, stop the madness. Like, Kathy Bates, get out of my life. And she won the Oscar, fair play to her.
But do you still love Misery?
Stephen King movies, there's probably about 10 brilliant ones, and then there's about 100 absolutely rubbish ones. Next year should be a big year for them, but things like Shawshank and Stand By Me. So Misery belongs in that, you know, iconic rewatchables, as opposed to all the other, you know, I'm not even going to name half of them because they're so bad. It's very important that I mention my own emo side, Edward Scissorhands.
Brilliant film. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh my God, I watched it. I went to cinema about 6 times to see that movie. I have my Italian Edward Manny de Forbici poster still to this day, and I
adored it.
And it was funny, but it was dark, and there was a really lovely feel right through.
Yeah, it was
so
kind
artistic.
Yeah, it was just beautiful to look at, and it was just, and again, the sound, the score was beautiful, and
Johnny Depp at his best.
Yeah, and pure emo. Like, if in any way, if you're ever going to be an emo, that's the movie for you. Awards wise for the year. So Kevin Costner's Dancing with Wolves won 7 Oscars, beating, unfortunately, Goodfellas, which still is a bit...
Yeah, and, you know, Dances with Wolves, it was good. It wasn't that good.
But it was in the 90s, unlike these days, in the 90s, that was a classic Hollywood Oscar movie. And you could see, and it was, again, it was a much more closed voting academy, and they were a lot older, you know, they were older, and they just went man on a horse, 3.5 hours. Yeah,
Native Americans,
and they didn't like the violence in Goodfellas. That was simply it. The same way Tarantino, some of his didn't make it because, you know, they got nominated but they didn't win because of the fact that the voting academy was also old and liked old kind of movies. So, as I said, Kathy Bates won for her role in Annie Wilkes in Misery. But probably, I remember watching it live, and the most disturbing and upsetting thing for me of the night was the fact that Madonna, with her song Sooner or Later, I Always Get My Man from Dick Tracy, beat my man, John Bon Jovi's Blaze of Glory. And I'm probably still upset to this day because...
She got an Oscar for that tune.
Like,
and Madonna
can you
is
even,
great, but...
Can you even...
John Bon Jovi.
Can
Bon Jovi
anybody
was
remember the tune of that song? No. It's Madonna, that's why. Where, as opposed to, I can give you Blaze of Glory. I'm not going to give it to you now, but now that would be my bias, but I don't care. And obviously, still people talk about the fact that when you look back, Dancing with Wolves, not Goodfellas, not a good look.
We've also got so much more that's happened in 1990. Like, it was a great year. There was lots going on. Obviously, it was the end of the 80s, and it was a new decade. And here in Ireland, there was, you know, it wasn't quite the start of the Celtic Tiger, but there was a good feel.
There was just a lot of American TV that, I suppose, prestige-esque kind of stuff was starting to land. Most notably, Twin Peaks. Like, David Lynch's Twin Peaks was...
And you loved Twin Peaks.
Oh, it was... As I said, I was in Manu College, and we used to watch it in a friend... Because the house we were in, we didn't have... we had a TV, but we didn't have any... We didn't have RTE for some reason. That's just stupid, because we could have used rabbit's ears. We're such more... Anyway, we used to watch it in a friend's house every Monday and record it, and then go back to my house and watch it twice again. And then there'd be meetings in the canteen, and we'd miss lectures discussing... Kind of, so this to me is the start of the whole going down the rabbit hole stand behavior of people kind of spotting something in a show and going
on forums, really. The start,
yeah,
of forums.
Trying to figure out who did the murder and is this a, you know, a red herring, and it was madness. And then Julie Cruz's score was one of the most beautiful things, and as a kind of is depressing as hell, but something you would listen to on loop in the house. This is like six lads live in a house and we'd be playing it out. It's insanity, but what a show! Absolutely adored it. Then you, and obviously Agent Dale Cooper, Kyle MacLachlan played him with, and his love of coffee and cherry pie. Like, to us, we all wanted cherry pie. And then we had some cherry pie, we're like, that's, we'll stick to apple tart. Thank you very much. Also out that year was, believe it or not, Beverly Hills 90210, or 90210 to their friends. So Brandon and Brenda living in Beverly Hills, California. It bizarrely, in its first year, it kind of flopped. It didn't really catch on. However, it kind of touched on many topical and hot topic buttons that teenagers were into. Like, there was huge things. And from its second year on, it grew and grew. And then it just became this smash.
It was huge. I mean, for example, I always wanted to visit the Peach Pit.
Yes.
Because the chef or the owner would always help them. And I thought, that guy seems so cool. But yeah, it was massive. I used to watch it every
week.
Yeah,
when you think of how big the OC became years later, like Beverly Hills 902 was the OC before the OC, except everybody was about 40 in the show, but they were playing like 17-year-olds.
They were some of the actors. And I remember actually bumping into Jason Priestley on Grafton Street years later,
yeah,
and he looked exactly the same. He hadn't aged.
Also, also that year, it came out in the States in December 1989. However, it landed in Ireland in 1990, was, believe it or not, The Simpsons, which is now on its 36th season. So it's kind of mad to think that that's how old The Simpsons is.
Why, you little...
The Simpsons, next Sunday.
Classic must-see TV, sitting around the TV watching it. A lot of people big into that, and obviously now it's on its 36th season. Other shows just launched in that year that kind of still are in people's heads over the years. So Law and Order, the first ever Law and Order. Northern Exposure, for those Canadians out there who remember that kind of cuteness. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, believe it or not, and Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean, I always thought Mr. Bean was earlier, so that was 1990.
I thought it was that as well, so maybe I'm just doing me maths wrong. But
I think you're right, and Mr. Bean is still a global sensation.
It felt like it was 80s, like mid to late 80s, but everything feels like the mid to late. But it's like, oh no, it's 1990, so there you go, Mr. Bean. And then one show that I was obsessed with, and it's kind of weirdly become popular in the kind of, you know, gangs of people who go out with for a party and book a room, like these escape rooms. So The Crystal Maze on Channel 4 launched with Richard O'Brien, who people may remember from the Rocky Picture Show. This was a group of people, contestants, doing these challenges over in different, set in different period timepieces. And you win, everything you win, you get extra time for your, you're in this dome. And everybody knows the dome. They'll see it where there's these kind of gold foil tickets flying through the air. The aircon has blown them everywhere. And you have to catch the gold ones and not the silver ones and pack them away. And it was absolute madness. And I religiously watched that show for about 4 years, and then it went away.
And it was a sensation at the time. I suppose it was like The Traitors is now. It's massive.
Yeah, that's a really good. It's The Traitors of now, but you go to London now and there's a Crystal Maze. You can do like all they pop up as a Hatchatron, escape rooms. The Crystal Maze is now a thing. But I think at some point, if it was a betting man, it'll come back on TV. They had it just pre-COVID. Richard Iowadi was presenting it, but then because of COVID, they shut it down. But I have a feeling it's such a kind of iconic thing that I think Channel 4 at some point will bring it back.
Well, Dave O'Callaghan, thank you so much for bringing us back to 1990. The Rewind, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for The Rewind 1990. Until the next time, I'm Henry McKean, and thanks for joining us.
The Rewind with Henry McKean.
It's time to have your high-five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today for a free welcome offer that can get you spinning and winning right away. Visit HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.